Mormon Matters Podcast is a production of the Open Stories Foundation and is seeking to build financial support separate from Mormon Stories Podcast. All donations to Mormon Matters are fully tax deductible and go directly towards keeping the podcast alive and towards building a community of support for Mormons like you. To support the podcast or to join the community, please become a monthly subscriber today at mormonmatters.org.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Mormon Matters Podcast. This is your host, Dan Weatherspoon. I love this particular episode. I'm recording this introduction alone in my office here. I've already recorded the various segments of this. This episode is the result of the call for collaboration that I offered last time, asking for people to share stories of church leaders who have really touched their lives in a positive way. We so often will hear stories of somebody who's legalistic or doing things that sort of make you feel less welcomed at church. And so I just wanted to ask people to share some of the stories of the people who really either surprised them or opened up their own heart to them. And they're just people who are leading and doing things right. And in some ways, as I did these interviews with people, that's what it kind of came to be. It wasn't so much leadership as simply people who quote unquote got it. Somehow they saw the big picture. They see that the gospel is about welcoming and not turning away. They're about seeing young people who are struggling or, you know, looking for their own identity and saying, these still are great kids. We want them here, no matter if they have a mohawk or something like that. That'll be one of our stories here today. Anyway, it's just been a real pleasure to do it, and not only was it was neat to hear the stories of the leaders that you'll encounter here, but I just loved interviewing the people that I did, and just seeing them, you'll hear as much about their own spiritual journey as other things, and it was just really neat to come across these friends that have found some stability, who found that place of confidence in the church after a struggle. The first segment will be with a friend of mine named Lori. Lori and her husband are longtime friends of mine, and I've heard them tell this story and how meaningful it was to them. So of all the ones here, they weren't responding to the call from my podcast, but I went out and got this first story from them. I'm not giving their last name, and we're not giving a clue of location. As you'll see in this story, there's a bit of a reveal about a stake leader's own medical stuff, and so we just wanted to make sure that we'd keep that information anonymous in terms of identifying. So, not that we think that he would probably be upset, but that was a choice we made. So, here's the first segment.
In the fall of 2011, our youngest son was serving a mission stationed in Switzerland. And the week before Thanksgiving, we received a call from his mission president in Austria, and he had traveled the mission home under some stress and worries. But after several days at the mission office and in consultation with our son and with us, it was decided that he should come home, at least for some time on medical leave, to receive some counseling. And it was clear that he was struggling with some mental health issues. And so airlines in the U.S. were all booked because of the Thanksgiving travel. And so we were there on the Thanksgiving night at the Salt Lake Airport. It was all jammed, you know, everybody picking up people and holiday travelers. But the international terminal was pretty empty. And we waited for his plane, and after most of the other passengers had left, he emerged, our son did, alone. And his head was bowed, and he was clearly discouraged and really all but broken, you know. He had so desperately wanted to go on a mission and do this. And so we hugged him and tried to buoy his spirits, you know, as we drove to the stake center for the pre-scheduled meeting with our stake president. And so obviously with trepidation, we all go there. We're not knowing exactly what's going to happen. When we arrived there, our stake president was waiting for us, and he asked to meet with our son alone for a few minutes. And then after a short time, he invited us to come in. And the three of us sat down with him, and he offered a lot of encouragement and hope. He made it clear that it was no disgrace that Andrew was home. to be home to deal with these issues. And it was no different than coming home, dealing with a broken leg or some other urgent, you know, medical issue. And he told him that many people in all walks of life and all levels of accomplishment struggle with the same issues. And then all of a sudden, he stopped, and it was kind of a shock to all of us, but he said he had to take a pill every morning. And in this matter-of-fact way, he had to deal. He had issues of the same kind. And after the interview, Andrew had gone in there with these really low spirits, and afterwards, he came out, and he was different. You know, he came out of that interview 45 minutes later, and he was, like, encouraged and optimistic and probably happier than he'd been in a lot of months. And then over the next few months, he met with a therapist in the state missionary department that continued with that same supportive way that our state president had started, and really diagnosed some of the struggles and our son was going through, and it's really helped him. And so with counseling and medication, he's been able to come back to be the person that he was before this started occurring, and be able to accomplish many wonderful things, be back to the person that we know. So it was a really miracle for us that, yeah, that state president was there at that time, able to make such a difference in the lives for our son.
Well, that is so neat that he would share that, as, you know, because there's such a stigma in so many cases. But it's
right.
So did he actually say it was an antidepressant, or was it just a pill that to kind of manage some of the same issues that?
Well,
that
and
going
he
through?
wasn't really specific, but he was very adamant that he'd been doing the same thing. He had to take medication for many years to manage his own issues. And he opened himself up and made himself vulnerable at that moment, and and very entrusting of us and of our son, and it was a moment, I think, that showed our son that that even someone who he looked up to, like a state president, has had some sort of these same kind of issues, you know, that it's not easy for any of us, and that it's not something that he had to be ashamed of. And I think it made a huge difference for him. He was able to go forward and not feel bad in the same way that I think he was feeling when he first came home.
And I've heard you and your husband talk about this occasionally, and it made a huge difference for you guys too.
Huge, huge. Because, you know, it's that moment when you are just aching for that child, because you know how incredibly bad they're feeling, that they have somehow caused this, that they are at the root of this problem, that they weren't strong enough, or they weren't brave enough, or they didn't pray hard enough, or they didn't, you know, and that's really not the case. And so for our state president to be there and to say, this is something that you have to deal with, but it's not some part of you that isn't good enough, you know, that's the part that really made the difference, I think, to me, anyway.
And I know there's a piece of this, too, that just the reason, you know, I'm doing this podcast in certain times is just to sort of balance out the horror stories that we sometimes hear of a leader that isn't compassionate, that, you know, would be a strict rule follower, or would naturally see mental illness of some sort as a you know, a lack of trying or effort or something. And
so
just that this guy got it and helped your family is just one of my favorite stories of this type.
Right.
So I appreciate you sharing it. Is there any other piece of it that you want to go into?
Well, you know, I think that especially for so many women, and I know that we're talking about our son, but for so many women, we push ourselves to believe that we have to be perfect and everything has to be just perfect. And if you can't do it, then somehow you didn't do everything you could, you know? And I think that you know, our Heavenly Father loves us enough that He's provided ways and medications and things in this very different world that we're living in now that has so many more pressures that are different, so much more technology and just a faster moving society. And I think that there's not as much time to reflect or to have time to calm down. And so I think our Heavenly Father knows that we need these things. And I think that He's provided them for us. And, if we don't use them in the correct way, then we really are holding ourselves back from being able to do the things that we can do if we go forward. And I think sometimes we do it to ourselves, but also leaders can do it to us too. We always look at that perfect family or that perfect Mormon family or the perfect bishop or state president or whatever, and we think that they aren't living or having to do the same things we do. And when a leader is willing to be open about that, I think it makes a huge difference in the lives of all of us that are struggling to find our way through.
Yeah, parting the veil a little bit, is such an act of trust, and so neat that you had that. So thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely.
Our next segment is a chat with Brian Dillman, who's a listener to the podcast and who wrote in a little bit about wanting to share a bit about one of his early young men's leaders, as well as a stake president, institute teacher, young adult bishopric member of his, and just the differences that they've made in his life, especially, well, certainly growing up, and then during a real intense wrestle with some discoveries about church history and a real disruption in his faith. So, Brian Dillman.
The first leader I'd want to talk about is a guy that I think of as my young men's president throughout growing up, becoming a priest, going on my mission. And he was a young men's president for a time, but he was also in the bishopric and was always there planning the high adventure camps and being involved with the youth conference and all those sorts of things.
And what town is it that you grew up in? Is this Utah or is this away from Utah? Okay,
this
Utah.
Is Syracuse, Utah.
Okay, so, cool. Up just by Layton and stuff. Syracuse. Okay, good.
So I guess some of the I was trying to think back, why was this guy important to me? And I was trying to think some of the things that he taught. And I don't remember any of the prescriptive or the damning messages where you got to do this, this, and this, and then life will be okay. I don't remember him teaching things like that. I remember him elevating and uniting the young men's group, gave us a really strong sense of purpose as he was preparing us to go on missions, ideally. And one of his favorite hymns was Hope of Israel, and we ended up singing that him all the time, and he would go through the verses and talk about everything, and he really saw us as the hope of Israel. And I remember getting to the MTC and we were singing this hymn at some point, and everybody was reading it through from the hymnal, and I was surprised. I'm like, didn't you go through Young Men's and you have this thing memorized?
So
he really made that sort of come alive for us. But more important than that was I had a really close relationship with him. He lived down the street. He had a son that was my age, and we played around quite a bit through high school. We had jobs at the same place. And some of his characteristics, he was a bit irreverent, which I liked. He would make jokes that were off color or just, I don't know, made us feel more comfortable. Almost every Sunday, I would go down to his house and we'd have chips and salsa and we'd watch like an old John Wayne movie or an old war movie. He had this whole closet full of movies.
Is this you or a bunch of the young men?
This is me and his son. Okay. and him. And he was, he just made you feel like one of the guys. And he admitted, I remember changing the bishopric at one point and I was listening to a conversation. He admitted feeling beaten down, feeling like he wasn't, like them as a bishopric were not doing well. And I found that surprising because in my eyes, that bishopric was absolutely wonderful. I felt loved by them. I felt led by them. And it was sobering to know that you can be doing good things and still sometimes have these feelings of, maybe you're not as good as, maybe we can cut that part out.
No, that's interesting. So, yeah, they're performing at a high level for you, but maybe he's thinking that among themselves they weren't getting along great?
The bishopric, I believe they worked together well, it seemed to. I think it was dealing with the stake leadership and maybe going to stake leadership meeting or training meetings where they felt like, man, we're not doing what we're supposed to be doing. And anyway, so that was kind of nice as I went on my mission and stuff to know that, other people are feeling the same way, feeling like they're not living up to certain standards of other that other people set for them. So yeah, he was always there. Service projects. They'd walk the street, him and his wife, and we'd be out with our dog or whatever. And they were just people that I knew for a long time and had a close relationship with. So up through, and I went on my mission, and he was always there. The other leader I would like to talk about was a man. When I first moved to Syracuse, it was a very small town. Now it's all developed. And he was like the local dentist. So almost everybody went to this guy's dental practice. So I got to know him in one of my least favorite places. But I guess going there all the time made it so I got used to him. But he was in the stake presidency. He was the institute teacher at some point. And he was the bishop of my singles ward just before I got married. So he called me to teach in the singles ward. And what impressed me about him in this rural area, this man that went to some school in Illinois for dental school, he seemed incredibly intelligent. And he was. He didn't just seem that way. He was what I would call a scriptorian. He knew the scriptures very well. And he was sincerely emotional. It seemed like when he would bear his testimony or he would extend a special calling to somebody, he would start to break up almost every time. But you could just tell it was sincere and that he really was thinking about these people. It wasn't some sort of an act. He was key in organizing a lot of stake young men camps. And these camps were really what I guess was the seed of my testimony in just having rich spiritual moments. And they developed these rich spiritual moments without hyperbole, without using silly folk stories or anything like that. They would talk about Joseph Smith and the things that he went through. They would talk about the atonement. And it was just a place where I think me and my friends, and I would think most of the people there, really started to get a taste for their testimony and their relationship with God and with the church. And so I think the common thing between those two is that they were always there, and I saw them as normal people. I didn't only see them at church. Mm-hmm. So I grew up there in Syracuse. I went on a mission. I got married, and I continued going to school. We had two kids and went to graduate school in Iowa. And we had our third child in December. That was about 6 months before I was supposed to graduate. And I needed to write up some papers so I could put them on my resume and get a job. I hadn't had a job lined up yet, and I needed to finish up my dissertation and defend it. And so I felt like I had all these things piling up. And then I found a website, one of these websites that illustrates all the doubt-promoting questions or historical facts regarding the church or regarding God or whatever it might be. And so within 2 or 3 hours, I had my world turned upside down, my theological world turned upside down. And combined with all the stress that I had of finishing school and getting a job and being a father and all that, it was absolutely overwhelming. And it's hard for me to explain how that felt. And I imagine there's a lot of people that listen to Mormon Matters that have gone through something similar. And I imagine it might be a little different than uncovering these things while you're reading several different books or over the course of 10 years. But having all of these points that John DeLynn goes over in all his interviews, having all that shoved in my face in the course of 2 or 3 hours really shook me up. And so I had a lot of anxiety. I had this feeling of, I have to figure this out. Is the church true? Is it not? Is God there? Or is it just my imagination? All these really heavy thoughts were on my mind all the time, and I was up till 3 a.m. where I couldn't fall asleep. And it was just a awful experience, really honestly considering the truth or the possibility of my faith being based on something that is not true. So I felt a lot of pressure there, and I didn't really know who to talk to. I didn't want to direct other people to all these issues. And so luckily these two men were on Facebook, of all things, and I just was able to reach out to them. And I wanted to, you know, I thought back to my youth and how good I felt about things. And I just wanted to hear their testimony or something. So I just asked them, could you write, I sent them a message, could you write your testimony down and send it to me? I kind of explained vaguely what I was going through. And they both responded immediately.
Wow, neat.
Within a day or one might have been within the hour or so.
And so, like, you weren't keeping in touch with them through Facebook. You just, like, discovered they were on Facebook and added them?
Like, they right had, we I added them as friends a while ago, but it wasn't like we were chatting once a month.
Right, So pretty much years later kind of thing.
Right, yeah.
Cool.
So I knew they were there, and I just thought, oh, yeah, those guys are there. I trust them, and reached out to them, and... the one, my young men's president that lived down the street, he had told me before, and it didn't have as much meaning then as it does now. He had told me before that he considers me like one of his sons, and he had a son that had left the church, and during that time, he decided to write up his testimony in detail and his thoughts, and he shared that with his children and with me. And so I felt really privileged to be put in that place, to be sort of adopted into his family. Not that I needed to be, I had a great family of my own, but I felt a great deal of love coming from that gesture of sharing this intimate part of his life with me that he had only shared with his children. And so that was, his testimony was similar to what you would hear at church, I would say. He did have some more detailed spiritual experience that he talked about, and that was nice. But I think the gesture of understanding, of, you know, saying everything's okay, I've doubted too, you know, I've had questions as well, and empathizing with me and extending a hand is what sort of calmed me down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
The other leader of mine that was in the stake presidency and the institute teacher and bishop, he contacted me and asked for my phone number and wanted to talk. And I didn't know quite what to expect. I knew he was a very loving person. I don't think he was going to just, you know, tell me, quit worrying about that. I didn't expect that, but I didn't know. And he called me up and we talked, and we went through Doctrine and Covenants 93, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like sitting in one of his institute lessons all over again, where the details of that section and the richness that's there, he made that clear again, and just showed that it wasn't, I don't think any of this was a proof that, okay, everything's fine, the church is true, but it was, you know, he showed me the richness that was there, and just the, just extending the hand and being there. I mean, you always hear young men's leaders, and I've said this to young men that I work with, that you can call me any time of the night, you can
right.
talk to me 10 years later, and that seems like a very trite thing to say, but they really meant it. And that meant a lot to me, that I wasn't just someone that they worked with for 2 or 3 years while they had these callings. I was someone that they cared about. I was an individual that mattered to them and that they remembered. Even though the conversation could be uncomfortable talking about the validity or truthfulness of the church, they, you know, they were able to still reach out.
That's so awesome. And so did these turn into weeks and weeks of conversation, or was it just this got you calmed down a little bit and then you were able to kind of face things at a better pace, or what would be the...
Yeah, I would say the latter. I you know, we had a couple messages here and there. I was really busy with finishing school, but I think them extending that hand calmed me down. It was a bit of a salve that I realized I didn't need to work everything out right now. and make a decision right now and either walk away or
right.
or feel fine about everything. You know, and I've realized that's what you, I think that's for me, that's what I needed. I needed more time to work things out, allow my mind to wrap around some of these realities and just work things out for myself. One of them continued to talk to me a little bit. He sent me a couple quotes, one from George Q. Cannon about not trusting in leaders, but trusting in your relationship with God. And I think for a lot of members that haven't really opened up and questioned things, that may seem the impact of that statement maybe isn't as great.
Right.
For those that have opened up and realized, wow, there really are legitimate questions that aren't readily answered. And it is more important to develop your relationship with God, with deity, with however you interpret that. That's the thing that's going to be lasting, not your view or interpretation of some church leader.
Yeah, and you're preaching to my choir here, baby. I love that. That's definitely the message that I do. Now, maybe you can, I don't want to put words in your mouth here, so just tell me if I'm like leading the witness here or something. But
sure.
You still engaged your brain, because I think a lot of times when somebody says, well, trust God rather than, you know, what your brain's been telling you about these leaders or about these, you know, things that don't add up or something like that. How does it work for you? I know how it works for me, but how is that trusting God, kind of getting centered spiritually yourself, then how does that not override your brain? How do you get in? Is it a balance that you found?
So I think the whole reason I was able to question things to begin with was sort of my training in graduate school. And you write these papers and you expect severe criticism, even though you've worked on these papers for a really right. long time and you've done these experiments, and to you, it's all beautiful and describes the nature of the world perfectly. And then someone comes back and has these real criticisms. And in order to make it productive, you have to accept those criticisms.
Right.
And you have to realize they're not attacking you. They're attacking your paper or whatever in order to make it a better paper, to have stronger arguments or to have arguments with less holes in them that you didn't see before. And so I was sort of trained to be in that mode to listen and to accept all these criticisms, and that sort of opened me up to this whole question. And so I had that sort of disposition to question and to not just ignore things. And so I can't, you know, that was part of, you know, you have the talks about integrity or blogs about integrity, and people leave because of their integrity. And so the way I've dealt with it is not ignoring things. I mean, as soon as President Ubdorf's talk came out, you had people putting up "doubt your doubts."
Right.
And that wasn't the point of his talk at all.
No kidding. I know. I hate that soundbite just because it has overpowered what the real message was. Yep.
Right. When I heard that talk, I was amazed at what he was saying, because for me, that had such significant, it validated me. He validated people that left the church. But people that haven't really accepted criticisms rather than ignoring them and sticking with, I don't know, some of the things that apologists say about some of the historicity issues and things like that, they're not appreciating the real, how do I say this, the way that he was reaching out there. Right. They see that he was just saying, don't worry about it, and that isn't what he was saying at all. So, yeah, it was just, for me, dealing with it has been being open to criticism and not rejecting it, but also not rejecting the experiences that I have had, what I would call spiritual experiences, not rejecting other people's spiritual experiences, whether they're a Buddhist person meditating, whether they're a church leader or church member or whatever they are. I think to disregard someone else's experiences and reinterpret it for them is not productive. And so I've sort of tried to look at everything globally and accept everything and formulate how I can view the world, how I can view how God might be talking to us, to church leaders, to people of all walks of life. And to me, that seems like a more realistic way to look at things.
And so the historical issues, the human failures and stuff, is it just sort of you've desensitized that as, you know, this was supposed to be different because this was the one true church.
Right.
And you just have now just normalized that and just say, well, you know, God works with everybody and we're all screw-ups. Or,
yeah,
you know, in some way, something like that. That's kind of where I landed too.
Yeah, that's the, I mean, that feels the most comfortable to, it's all part of it. I mean, you can't, I don't think you can set anybody up on a pedestal and expect perfection and then expect to not be disappointed.
Awesome.
I don't think that's, if you look at the scriptures, Old Testament, New Testament, everything, it's full of human error and little bits of inspiration.
Awesome. Thank you. Have you been in touch with these guys since you've kind of calmed down and these two great leaders that kind of gave you that initial reason to take some breathing room?
Oh, not much. That's something that I need to do. When I was there, I was in Utah visiting my mom this summer, and they were both busy, so I didn't have the chance to sit down and talk with them. But yeah, we're still friends on Facebook, so there's Nate. Potential out there.
Nate. Well, Brian, thank you so much for sharing these wonderful stories. Just people like, they're just good people, and it became genuine care. And though it started out probably as leaders and, this is another boy under my stewardship, just so neat that you were able to have these great guys that when the chips were down, when the panic was there, you still felt like you could reach out to them. And then just to know that so many years later, they were just right there for you. That's just fantastic. So thank you so much.
Thanks for having me on, Dan.
Our third segment is with another Brian. This is Brian Kissel, and he's also a Mormon Matters listener, as well as one of the hosts of Exploring Sainthood podcast. So it's great to have him on and a little cross-pollination, and I hope everyone will go over to Exploring Sainthood and listen to Brian there. But he's going to tell the story of three leaders who really left a lasting impact and really kind of gave him the confidence that he was always wanted, always welcomed, always loved, even when he was a bit struggling for his own identity. Brian Kissel.
So I'm really not sure why this is, but perhaps it's something within the culture, within my own personality, but there's something about me and my relationship with Mormonism that I've always kind of craved or had this desire for validation, right? I think it does come from our culture when we're kind of struggling and we're needing help, we can go to our bishops, we can kind of discuss some of these things, and we're confessing sins and doing things to kind of receive this validation that, yes, we are on this right track, and if we're not, then we can kind of be helped to get on the right place. And that's kind of been something that was with me during a lot of my time within the church. And what I wanted to talk about is how that can kind of that I what I also think is a human desire for to kind of be validated that we are doing our best and that we are trying to go in the very best direction that we can. It can also be a difficult thing depending on the ways that these people who we're expecting validation from react.
Right.
What I wanted to talk about is a few different leaders that I had that provided me with that validation that not only am I loved, but I am wanted, and that although they may not necessarily understand me, that they just want me here. Let's just keep moving forward. So that's what I kind of want to talk about. So I'll just go ahead. So where I wanted to first jump in is when I was a teenager, I had a bishop. His name was Bishop Stuckey, and at that point, I was kind of in this rebellious stage of my life where I really did not really want to have anything to do with the church. I was really big into music and skateboarding. I had a band. I had a mohawk.
Fun. Utah punk.
Something. Yeah. So I would go to church and I would kind of participate, but I did not want to be there. And most of the times when I went, I would just leave. But there was something about this Bishop Stuckey that was really powerful for me. So when I did go to Mutual, I just remember a few different memories of him getting up and saying, one of the most important things that I want you guys to remember is that kind of your value, that I love you so much, that you are wanted here in this church. You are valued. And he, whenever I heard him speak, it was always that message of love and kind of this inclusive message. And it wasn't only in the ways that he spoke, but it was in kind of the ways that he did everything. Like for example, I said that I had a mohawk. He allowed me to bless the sacrament, which I'm sure probably bothered some people, but he just let me do that. He would let us and our band, we would go into the church in the cultural hall on the stage. We'd set up our band and we would just do little shows, just kind of recording ourselves and doing things like that. And he would always let us do that. One time he set up for our youth conference, he set up this opportunity for us to come and actually play in our band during youth conference for while they were swimming, and he even came and played with us with one song, and I just thought it was so cool. It was so different than any other bishop that I had ever had, and I think what he was doing was this just message. He was trying to send, at least the way that it felt to me, it was this message that, you know what, you may be different, you may not even want to be here, but I want you here, you know, and it was just really powerful for me. And it's not like he was just super soft and he wasn't really dealing with like commandments and talking about some of these more difficult things, because he was talking about all that stuff. There's this experience where we did something dumb, where we had a member in this band who we ended up getting a fight for some reason. He ended up quitting, or we kicked him out. I don't really remember the details, but we ended up writing this song, and I actually should probably take most of the blame, but it was basically the song where we were making fun of him, you know? And
whoa.
And I mean, we had done this fight. So it was a really rude song, and we would play it in our concerts. We played all the time, and the bishop ends up finding out about it, and he brought us in, and it was, and he talked to us about it, and we were just stupid kids. I didn't really realize what we were doing or what I was doing, but he kind of expressed that to us and was kind of demonstrating how harmful this was and how it was impacting this particular boy. And I just remember feeling so, so bad. And what was interesting, as I'm now looking back on it, as even then when he was trying to correct us, when he was trying to help us not do such a stupid thing, you know, or to be nicer, it wasn't like he was saying, "Oh, these are bad kids, I need to fix them." It was these are good kids, and they did something stupid. You know, these are people that I want in the church, and it was just really powerful as I kind of remember those experiences. And he was a really special guy.
Wow, that is really amazing. And so this is ages like 14, 15, 16, kind of.
Yes.
He was your bishop.
Yes.
Yeah. And was there anything that you could tell from his own life? Was he sort of out of the box looking to everybody else in the ward, or is just like, you know, he would look like your typical, you know, Peter Priesthood to outsiders?
I think he would very much look very typical. I was really shocked. A little while ago, I went to the Terrell and Fiona Givens fireside, and I went to that, and I brought my wife with me, and we were watching that. And he came in and ended up sitting in front of us, and I was like, "Whoa, you're coming to this," and we ended up having this great conversation. But So I think he is just a very thoughtful person, and to outsiders, I think he would just view. I mean, to most people, he would just be a normal Peter Priesthood-y guy. Yeah.
Yeah. So neat. Well, cool. So that's leader number one. What else? Who else do you want to celebrate today?
Okay. The next story I wanted to talk about was after. So I ended up going on a mission. After I started diving, trying to continue my understanding of the gospel, and I ended up going through my faith transition / crisis or whatever we want to call it. And I felt this desire to go in and speak with my bishop. And I mean, maybe I was seeing, maybe he could help me. I was just looking for, again, that validation, that help, that to help me be on that right path. And I went in and talked to him, and it was a really interesting experience. I mean, I think if I went back and I kind of took the video, you know, and watched every single little piece, I bet I would be able to find some things that we talked about that would make me uncomfortable. I mean, I think he had fear, you know, he had been, mm-hmm. His name was Bishop DeWall, and he had been in the ward with Grant Palmer, and he had fear. He had seen Grant Palmer leave the church and just have some of these hard things that have happened. And
interesting. Yeah. Wow. That's
So that brought, So that brought him a little bit of fear. And I think it kind of scared him too, that I knew who Grant Palmer was. So I think I would be able to find these different things that I would be like, well, maybe I don't know. But the main point of this meeting was that I remember is just this love that he was kind of resonating. I mean, he didn't have, he wasn't really like an intellectual. He was a businessman, a really bright guy. But I asked him, have you ever really struggled with some of these questions? And he was very honest. He said, no, none of this stuff has ever really bothered me. And he was like, I don't really know anything about any of that. But at least that's how I remember it. Maybe it was different. But again, the way he was talking to me, it wasn't, well, how dare you even have questions? How dare you be worrying about all these different things? You must not be reading your scriptures. It was, yeah, maybe I don't necessarily understand this, but you are wanted. You are loved. We want you here in the church. Let's keep trying to work together. He offered to be able to meet with me as much as I would like. At that time, I was the ward mission leader, and I was really worried about it. This was kind of in the beginning of it, and I didn't know. I mean, could I go out and talk to people about the gospel? Was I being dishonest by doing that? And I didn't know what to do. And he said, if you feel like it would be best to stay in the calling, then yeah, I would be more than happy to keep you in the calling. If you feel it would be better for you to go into a different to be released and maybe have some time to kind of deal with stuff and think about it, then I will be totally fine doing that as well. So it was just, I didn't feel like he was saying, it felt like validation. It felt like he was saying, yes, even though you're having these struggles, you are wanted. We want you here.
Nice. And, you know, then that's also trust. I trust that you'll know what to share in Sunday school and priesthood meeting and in an investigator's home versus what you might share with me or when you're talking about these things. So that's neat. That is wonderful. So that's Bishop DeWall. Anything more on him?
No. Let's go to the next one. The next one is kind of shorter as well. So a little bit later, I started getting more into a lot of this different stuff. I discovered Sunstone and Dialogue. I started really looking into Mormon history more than I had been, trying to find answers, trying to learn more, you know. But I think there's something, and I don't think this is just with me, but I felt a lot of guilt as I discovered Sunstone, starting to learn about it, even though they were things that were helping me, right? There were things that were helping me see things in perhaps a way that wasn't as bad as I thought it was. I was finding those things to be very valuable, but I felt guilty about it. So I don't know.
Am I affiliating with apostate groups or Recommend? Is that the kind of thing?
Exactly. Temple Recommend question. Do you disagree? And there were people in, if you go to Sunstone, there were people who
definitely
said
yeah.
things that were disagreed. So I was like, how can I do that? And I ended up going to, I had this institute teacher who was also in my stake presidency. He was the first counselor. And I had really enjoyed a lot of the different classes that I had taken from him. His name was Brother Forsythe, or President Forsythe. And when I went to him and I was kind of trying to kind of express that I was really wanting to better understand, I'm learning about all these different things, and I was asking him about Sunstone and some of these things, and the way that he responded to me, I thought was just so, so interesting. He said, I think that we need to take the Book of Mormon as a really good example. If you look at the Book of Mormon, it has a lot of really difficult things, right? It has antichrists. It has people being slaughtered and killed. It also deals with difficult things. You know, the way that he responded to me on that was saying, yeah, so don't ignore these other things that you have been doing. Don't stop reading your scriptures and praying. I mean, continue searching and doing all these things you need to be doing. But if you find these resources to be valuable or to be helping you, then it's a good thing, you know. And that might sound really silly to some people, but that was really important to me to feel like, yes, I am trying to follow the Spirit and I'm trying to grow and come to this better place. And he was very supportive. And even if maybe he, and maybe I misrepresented him, but I think the main feeling from him was love. It was, we want you here. Let's just keep trying. Let's keep learning. Let's keep looking into different things. Like keep reading your scriptures and doing all that stuff. But let's just keep growing.
That is so awesome.
And I just have one more. So
awesome.
So this one. Okay. So it was a little bit later. I ended up meeting the person that I wanted to marry, and I had decided that I wanted to still experience all those different things. I wanted to continue to move forward. So I wanted to be married in the temple, and I wanted to just raise my family in the church and continue just trying, even though I still had all these different questions. So anyways, we went into this interview with the bishop that I had at that time, and he was actually a new bishop. So I was probably the first interview that we were probably the first couple interview to get married.
Oh, okay.
He had done. So
he was getting all nervous about the sex talk he needed to have with you guys, and you throw this at him, huh?
Exactly. So what happened? I had kind of decided that I didn't feel it was necessary to really go into all that stuff again. So I felt if it kind of comes up, I'm going to be honest and kind of express to him. But I was okay with just kind of moving forward and because I felt worthy and I felt it was good. But anyways, what happened was, I don't remember if it was before the Temple Recommend questions or after, but he looked at me and he said, could you please bear your testimony of the Savior for me? And I kind of felt, I don't know why that was a shocking question but I didn't know how to respond. I mean, this was something that I was really struggling with, and I had such a strong testimony of the Savior, and I was really trying to better understand this. I didn't know what I believed, but I knew that I wanted to move forward. I wanted to live in a faithful way. And so the way I responded to him was that I love the teachings of the Savior, and that I love the Savior, and I don't really know. I have a lot of questions and doubts, and I don't really know how to understand a lot of these different things. I think there are a lot of different problems, but I want to move forward in faith, and I want to live my life as if Jesus is my Savior and Redeemer, and to put my hope in Him. And that kind of led into just a little different conversation. And again, I could probably go back to that and find little pieces that would be uncomfortable for me now. But into our conversation a little bit, he said, "Well, don't worry. I'm still going to give you a temple recommend." And to me, I was like, "Oh man, I didn't even know that might not have been an option." You know, I was like, "I thought I was good," but he did that. But again, he was newer, and I don't have any problem with that. But again, the main point of that conversation that kind of went forward is, well, this is good that you are trying, you know, that and he also was saying, yeah, I may not understand all these different things, and gave really good advice and things, but it was, and again, with both him and when I was speaking with DeWall, it wasn't like they were able to answer my questions or my doubts or really the things that they said I thought were interesting, but it didn't fix anything. But what they were able to do was to really express that validation that, yes, you are loved, you are wanted. We want you here to be with us. Let's keep moving forward. Let's try to keep improving, but you are wanted. And I think when I look at a lot of these different stories that and experiences that people have, I feel so sad that message is being lost, because I think in most leaders, those are their intentions, but they don't, they're not expressing it, and it's right. Not coming across that, okay, yes, I may not have any clue, and maybe I think you're totally wrong, but the message needs to be, but we love you so much, and we right. just want you to keep with us, keep trying, be here with us. You don't need to leave, you know, and that's the message that I got from those leaders.
Dude, that's so awesome. So four great shepherds in your life. So, man, I love these stories. Are you somehow now armed for when you get a leader who doesn't understand you? I'm just trying to, you know, follow up a little bit here and say, or have you in the middle of these, did you get a leader who made you feel less validated? And were these guys who treated you well and told you they loved you and wanted you, are they strengtheners to you even during those times? Or, you know, reflect now on when you might run into the guy who's just more about the purity of the temple demands exact 100%. I know, you know, kind of thing.
No. And I think that's a really good point. And I've kind of reached this place where validation is not as important.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I kind of laugh when I'm like, oh, I need to be validated.
Right.
I need to be told that I'm doing what's right. So it kind of sounds silly now, but it was very real to me at that time.
Sure.
But I do think, and I've had other leaders who I don't think would have responded in those ways, and as well as people who I know who are in leadership roles that weren't necessarily over me, but kind of expressing this opposite,
right.
Like what you were saying, where like having a conversation with this one leader where he was saying, well, why is there suffering in the world? And I say, it's complicated, and I don't really understand. And he said, no, it's easy. You know, it's don't, what are you talking about? You know, it's not difficult or complicated. It's agency, you know, and kind of the way he would speak with me, it sometimes would feel, yeah, like no, you need to be believing in the right way or you are in trouble. But
yeah.
So those messages are going to be out there, and to be totally honest, that was sometimes me, you know, where that was what I felt. And I think that's why, like on the mission, when I'm having discussions with other people, I felt like that was true, that we needed the truth, you know, we needed everything to be perfect. And if people are going to be bringing coke to ward parties. They can't do that. You know? I want to have sympathy for those leaders as well, because I think their intentions are not, I think deep down their intentions are love, but I don't think we really express that. I think those leaders have been a strength to me. At least that when I'm looking back and hearing these different stories, I can say, well, yeah, I recognize that pain that you've gone through, and that needs to stop. We need to figure out ways to decrease that from happening, from us behaving in these meaner ways. But I can also say that has not always been my experience. I have had amazing, wonderful leaders who have expressed that love, even though they may not have really even understood me.
Mm-hmm. That's so great. You know, and you've hit two hurdles there that are just so important to me. When, you know, the shift from external validation to that confidence that you have in yourself, and they were a part of that, but now that's more with you. You know, so you've got that inside you, and then just that other thing of like, how many times do we forget that we were once narrow and, you know, self, you know, I don't want to say self-righteous, but we were down the line, and we kind of forget that everybody goes at their own pace, and the stuff that bugs us the most is probably stuff that we did at one time ourselves.
Yeah.
We don't like that part of ourselves. And so we're triggered by it. So, to me, what you've just landed in, those are two of the huge perspectives that I just, you know, I think really make for a good spiritual grounding. So neat. Thank you so much, Brian.
Yeah, I was happy to be here.
Our final segment is with Katie Langston. I know lots of you listeners will remember Katie from, at least a half a dozen Mormon Matters podcasts. She's been one of our favorite guests through the years. And she wrote me and said, Dan, I want to tell about a wonderful bishop as well as a very cool Relief Society president. And so here's her stories of those two great leaders, along with some bigger reflections on life and grace and things like that. And there's a neat surprise at the end of this one, too, so pay attention for that. This is Katie Langston.
I wanted to share a little bit about a bishop that I had maybe, you know, two or three, maybe even going on 4 years ago now. And I genuinely believe that, you know, he was called at just the exact moment that kind of showed me that Mormonism was still my path. I was very much at a crossroads in my life and in my faith journey. I can just kind of share a little bit about that, I guess.
Okay.
I think that the crux of my faith transition was very much an issue of trying to determine whether or not there was room for people who doubted in the church, and also whether or not there was grace, whether there was space for, you know, for people who are imperfect, because I've always been, I think I've said this before, but I've always been a bit of a perfectionist, and I think of myself now as a recovering perfectionist. But I was keenly aware of my imperfections. I was keenly aware of the fact that in a lot of ways I didn't feel like I measured up. And to a large extent, you know, I felt like, you know, I felt a little bit like a fraud, and that maybe, you know, maybe there wasn't a place for me because of that, because I had these doubts, and I'd had them for a really long time, and just, you know, just questions and concerns and things that, you know, you put them on the shelf, but it just kind of felt like the shelf was breaking a little bit. And I blamed myself for them. I thought it was probably because I was unworthy, that, you know, that I hadn't received like a testimony in the way that they say you'll receive testimony, you know. But it reached a point where I was like, man, I don't know, like how much more I can, you know, how I can do this anymore. I don't know that I can go on, you know, with these doubts. I don't know if I felt phony at church, knowing that I didn't maybe believe the way everyone else believed, but also feeling too afraid to say anything about it. So I got called to the Relief Society presidency in one of my wards, and I tried to turn it down.
You're married by this point. It's not a single ward. Okay.
Yeah. So, I was in the Relief Society president. It was a married student ward.
Okay.
In Moscow, Idaho.
Okay. So you're up in Idaho then. Okay.
Yep. And I actually tried to turn it down with a bishop, and I said to him, I don't think I should be this calling because I don't know that I can say that I have a testimony. And this bishop was really nice, and he said, that's okay. We still feel like the Lord wants you in this capacity if you're willing to serve. And I said, I can serve and I can do my best, but I don't know if I belong here. And he was like, well, you do. And I was like, okay. And I felt a weight lift off my shoulder because I'd said those words out loud, and we didn't get into the content of my doubts really. And I was like, maybe I can do this. And then the next Sunday, this bishop was released. And I felt horrible about that. I felt like I was back in the closet. And for a few months, it went that way until my temple recommend expired.
Ah.
And this new bishop was called. And I was really scared of him because I thought he was a really quiet guy. He seemed really serious. And I just assumed he was like way orthodox and like way, you know, down the line.
Yep.
But my temple recommend had expired, and he called me in for a temple recommend interview. And before he asked me the questions, he said, you don't know this, but I know this. You and I are meant to be great friends.
Wow. And this and isn't a line that you think he ran with everybody?
No,
okay.
No. And I said, okay. And he said, yeah, you and Lanny, that's my husband's name. He's like, we're, and me and my wife, we're the same. And I said, I don't know that I know what that means. And he was like, you think about things like pretty deeply, and you think about things a little bit differently, don't you? And I said, yeah, I guess we do. And he smiled and he said, yeah, I can spot him.
Oh, man.
So, anyway, so it turns out that he, you know, he's been published in Dialogue, and he's pretty thoughtful about his faith, and he's very open to other perspectives, and I had just completely misread him, you know, in my own fear. And anyway, we started into the temple recommend interview, and he asked me if I had a testimony, and I said, I don't think so. And he was so cool with that. He was like, okay, that's fine. And I was like, do you have to release me from my calling? He's like, no, I don't have to release you from your calling. And over the next several months, he was just, there was never any pressure on his part in terms of, you know, what I needed to believe or what I didn't need to believe. I was completely welcome to go to church and have doubts and teach lessons that were a little bit, you know, maybe off the beaten track just a little bit. I could talk to him or not talk to him about my questions. And we did have some wonderful conversations where I would say, well, what about, what do you think about this? And what do you think about that? And it was always from a standpoint of, well, that's a really good question. This is how I've wrestled with it. I don't know. You'll maybe come to your own conclusion a little bit differently, but
awesome.
This is how I make sense of it, you know? At one point, he asked me, we developed enough of a rapport that he asked me if it would be okay if there was another family in the ward that he felt like it would make sense for us to connect on some level. And I said that would be fine. And so, you know, my husband and I went over to their house, and we just all talked. You know, it was my bishop and these two friends and my husband and I, and we became extremely close friends with that other couple, and we became extremely close with this bishop. And it was just, and you're fine wherever you are, you know, you're okay at any point on your journey.
And in this case, it sounds more like your historical and other kinds of doubts versus your perfectionism, or was both being sort of healed and addressed at the same time?
I would say, like, probably my perfectionism was being healed and addressed at the same time, probably through therapy.
Okay.
Therapy, and I had some great, awesome therapy that helped with that side of it. I mean, they were intertwined. There's no, I feel okay sharing this. I mean, I have struggled with scrupulosity, which is like religious based OCD. So that's what I was wrestling with, like from a mental health standpoint at the time. And so all of that was kind of intertwined, and like faith and anxiety and perfectionism and doubt and all these things have always come in a neat little package for me.
Right.
But the just being accepted, you know, at church, being open about the fact that I didn't know that I had it all figured out and that I was, you know, really, really wrestling like on a really deep level with, you know, doctrinal, historical, other kinds of issues, you know, and just feeling like I didn't have to hide that was extremely healing for me.
That is so great.
Yeah.
And so still friends with this bishop today, or how does, what's happening?
Yeah, well, we moved away, you know, my husband finished graduate school and so we moved away and we moved here, and yeah, we're still friends. He wrote a letter of recommendation for me to go to graduate school, and you know, I was in touch with him when we just had our new, you know, our new baby a few months ago, and I try to keep him updated on, you know, the things that are going on in our family, because he had just such a really positive impact on our lives. It was, you know, it was a huge blessing. I told him when we left town, I wrote him a letter. You know, I think we both did, my husband and I both decided to write him a letter because he'd had such an impact on our lives. And I wrote him a letter. I said, you know, I think that God put you there at this exact moment, because I think, I don't know that any other bishop that I'd ever had could have, you know, if I'd had any other bishop, at least that I'd ever had in my life to that point, like, I don't know if I would have stayed in the church, quite literally. Uh-huh. I think I was looking around, you know, I was meeting with him and I was going to like other churches and stuff like that, like trying to figure out what I was going to do. So.
Wow. So neat. Well, I love hearing examples of folks like that. So thank you for sharing. Now, my understanding is you have another leader in your life that you wanted to brag up a bit, or at least share why she, in this case, is such a good shepherd.
Yeah, very, very good. When we moved, so we moved from Moscow, and we live in Salt Lake City now, and we have a really, really nice ward. Everyone is super, super nice in our ward, and it's great. But I noticed, like, my current Relief Society president was called, I think, like, a year ago. And I just, like, our first Relief Society president was super nice. But the second one, when she got called, I just noticed about her just like a really open and welcoming and really down to earth way about her. And at this point, like, you know, I've been much more settled. Like, you know, I feel like from an emotional and a mental standpoint, I'm doing very, very well. From a spiritual standpoint, like, a lot of the turmoil of the acute phase, let's say, of a faith transition has resolved, and I'm feeling like very, very, you know, the spiritual journey is never like, is rarely, you know, like rainbows and and lollipops, you know, and unicorns. Yeah. There's always stuff that you're wrestling through there's always that process of learning to tame the ego and, you know, give more to God and, you know, and separate the wheat from the chaff, as it were, I guess. But some of that acute kind of super painful, you know, wrestling and faith transition and really life transition that occurred a few years ago, that's all, you know, pretty well settled. So I wasn't in such a position where I was like needing a lot of support, but I still look, you know, I feel like, you know, maybe those of us who have gone through something like that, like, we know when we see someone that is reaching out in a special way to people who are maybe just a little bit outside the mainstream, you know? Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. So I noticed that my Relief Society president, Linda, when she gives lessons, she'll always make a point to include single women or working women or women who aren't able or for whatever reason don't have children.
Nice.
She always makes a point to try to be just down to earth about the fact that like nobody's perfect and stuff like that. One of my favorites was we had a Sunday school lesson And the Sunday school teacher was talking about the Relief Society organization and had her come up and talk about women's spirituality and women's spiritual gifts. And, you know, Linda knows her history. And so she was talking about how women in the old days would, you know, do blessings of healing and lay on hands and stuff like that. And it was like, why don't we do that anymore? And she's like, I don't know why. Like, awesome. Why does that happen anymore? Like, you know, so she's just, you know, very open and seems very willing to embrace people wherever they are on their journey. And I think that that's maybe a thread between the two leaders that I've talked about. It's just this willingness to like let people be where they are, not be threatened by that if they're
love that
wherever they are. So
wow. And so have you become friends and so she is just serving as that trusted person, but you're seeing that she's effective with other people too?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that there's like a real spirit of, you know, of welcome in our Relief Society, and I think there's a great diversity of sisters in our Relief Society. Sisters from at least the people that I know, there's, you know, that have felt like they could open up to me a little bit. There's people all across the spectrum of belief and struggling and wrestling with different things, and you know, I think she makes a point to help everyone feel like it's okay and they're welcome in our Relief Society.
Very cool. Now, you apparently noticed kind of right away when she was called. Is there outward appearances? Would she be, you kind of mentioned that you're the second bishop, the one that helped you so much there in Idaho, was studious and quiet, and you just assumed this or that. Does Linda carry herself in a way that would like just, what? She just looks like a typical Mormon? Or is there something else that just kind of...
She has like the funkiest style you'll ever
see. Oh, okay.
She dresses super, super awesome. She wears like these awesome cowboy boots and like they're like glistening and like just.
Okay. Just so she's her own person no matter what.
Yeah,
so,
oh, totally.
Yeah, so okay. So this wasn't one of those like, oh, I wonder what makes.
No, she's like,
total surprise.
She's got like this open and welcoming and like, hello kind of personalities, you know what
very
I mean?
Cool.
It's like really awesome.
Well, neat. Well, so Katie, just spend a couple more minutes with you. You mentioned the thread between them as all is accepting people where they were. You talked earlier about grace. Do you want to articulate the grace that this sort of feels like a little bit, and then we'll just probably close?
Sure. A mentor of mine talks a lot about the phrase that she uses is space and grace.
Oh, I like it.
And I think they go together. And the feeling that you get from both of these leaders that I've talked about is simply this idea that they are okay with you the way that you are. So they don't have an agenda for you. You know, they want you to be happy. They're rooting for you.
Right.
There's not like an agenda that you have to turn out a certain way or have, you know, a certain life experience or a certain opinion or come to a certain conclusion. It's more this spacious kind of attitude that makes you feel just okay to be yourself. And I think that that's really at the core of graciousness. You know, graciousness is looking at things as they are, looking at people as they are, you know, faults and flaws and all, which we all have, and saying, yeah, but you know what? I still love you and I still want you around, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's kind of like, you know, at least what I found in my relationship with Christ. It's like Christ sees me the way that I am, and he sees, you know, all the horrible things I think and the horrible things that I do, you know? But he still says, hey, you know, come on, let's be one together. Let's, you know, let's come together and let's be real. And I think that that's kind of at the core of graciousness and really probably at the core of love.
Thank you. Thank you. What a beautiful, beautiful way to share about that. So thanks for telling us about these two great people.
My pleasure. They are awesome.
Hey, listeners, something fun's happened. After Katie shared about her Relief Society president, Linda, she arranged for Linda to come on. She was just telling Linda about it. Linda goes, oh, I'd love to share a little bit. And so I have both Linda and Katie with me. We're going to focus on Linda. Linda, you heard what Katie had to say about you. She says that you're a person of unique style and openness and kind of walking through this Mormon world with a real open-heartedness to everybody and things like that. Thank you for doing that. What makes you tick? How did you get to be the way you are? Or are you as awesome as she thinks you are?
Well, you know, Dan, she's very kind. What Katie doesn't know and what I didn't know before I even came on or got to come tonight was she doesn't know what happened when I was called to be the Relief Society president. Because I also felt unworthy. Didn't think I was the right person. I asked the bishop, are you sure that I'm supposed to do this? And we have an awesome bishop. And he said, oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I prayed about it and you're the one. And one of the things I really thought it was when I would come, and I've been in primary a lot and I've been serving in other capacities that didn't allow me to go to Relief Society. I actually, in all my years of being a leader in or serving in our church, have never had a Relief Society colleague. I've either been women, I've been primary, I've never been Relief Society. Walking into the Relief Society room is so intimidating. It is so scary. And where do you sit? And who do you sit by? And if you don't have a sister that you have a relationship with and you know, it's one of the most scary things. And I thought, I do not want that to be a scary situation. I want there to be an openness, a welcoming, because I remember sitting and listening to their single sisters who didn't want to go to Relief Society, who didn't feel it was meeting their needs as an individual. I didn't always felt like it met my needs. I've always been a working mother. I've always had to do things a little unorthodox. And I wasn't raised in Salt Lake City. I was raised outside in Texas. And we had to do things a little differently. So it brought a different opinion and a different viewpoint. And my husband also said to the bishop, are you sure you want her?
Oh, man. Gee, thanks, dear.
He goes, she's really headstrong.
Hello.
He says, if the women don't riot after she's done being their leader. He's saying that in jest. So.
Yeah, yeah. It sounded like it's about a year now that you've been
It's been a year. It's been a year. And I'm not kidding you. The first few months I'm going, who is she and who is she? We didn't know. And how I picked my counselors, I'm not kidding you. I prayed about it and I went to a temple devotion and I looked to see who showed up to the temple devotion that day. And I thought, she's got to recommend. She's going to do good. Then I wanted to be sure I had people throughout the ward, not in just a cluster, but different types of individuals. So it was a lot of thought that went into that. And, I've just loved having this opportunity. And of course, Katie has such an open mind and she is so articulate and she brings such a freshness to everything that she does. She questions everything. She thinks it through. And I love that about her. I love people who challenge and who want to know why and who ask the questions. I would think it would be very sad if we didn't do that. So
Okay. So is there anything like in your own spiritual journey that kind of like makes you, I can kind of get a sense that you got a personality and a sense of self, but where did like the lack of fear about tough questions or people who, you know, really might be in that anger phase or something, you know, really in free fall or something? How did that come about for you or has it?
You know, I questioned a lot of things especially polygamy. I had a really hard time with that when I was in seminary. And I had a great seminary teacher who was just willing to listen to those questions and very graciously was able to explain. Wasn't able to answer it all, to be honest with you. I raised three daughters who I told them I want them to be independent, be independent thinking. I don't want them to just take things at face value. And they've all gone on. And my youngest daughter was quite a little rebel raiser, but she's turned out great, but she went through her phase. But for me, it's a personal journey. I think I was raised by a wonderful mother who also had the courage to do things and be her own person. And when we were first young married, me and my husband, I remember thinking, I'm not doing things traditionally like I see other sisters doing. Is that okay? Am I doing things the right way? I even asked a bishop one time, am I doing things the right way? Because I kind of want to do things differently. I don't want to just stay home right now. And I want to explore some other opportunities. I want to continue my schooling. And at that time, for my husband to put me through school while he put off his PhD was a different opinion of what was going on in our culture as being in the church. And the best wisdom that was ever given to me was, you two pray about it and you do what's right for your family. And that's the leadership that you need to listen to. And I knew I had a different path, and it was the right path. And I've always been blessed with people to accept me for where I'm at. And that's hopefully what I've been able to give to other people, accepting them for where they're at and loving them for who they are.
So it sounds like you've had good shepherds in your life too, along the way with those good things. Because, yeah, I don't know if Katie shared with you at all what the impetus for this is. Is, you know, often in these, you know, uncorrelated podcast groups and Facebook groups and things, you know, we'll just hear about the bishop or the leader that just shuts you down and makes the church feel narrow and stuff. And my sense was that there's, you know, 10 really great leaders for every one of those. And so that's why I just love hearing, you know, not only about you, but from you as well. And it sounds like you've had that experience too. Have either of you, Katie or Linda, been through the ringers with a bishop or somebody in a leadership position that really didn't probably embrace all this kind of stuff that we're valuing here? And how did you survive that? Or what's your plan if you do?
Well, I did get called out. This is Linda again. I was in seminary, and I was the girl, because this was in the 70s when the miniskirts came in. Okay, and so yes, I was sitting in seminary with a miniskirt on, and I had just moved here from Georgia, so I wasn't into the Utah culture actually. And he called me up in front of the class, and he called up another girl in front of the class, and she had a longer dress on. And I remember very distinctly, my skirt was pretty short. I mean, my hemline was above my hand. So I thought, And he says to the boys, now, which would you rather date? Would you rather date this girl here, or would you rather date this girl over here who obviously is more modestly dressed and more wholesome in appearance? And, the best part about that was most of the boys in that class were so appalled at that connection. And they said, you know, this girl here is the nicest girl you will ever meet. And she's so kind and she is so sweet and she will talk to me and help me. And I remember thinking, that was awkward.
Yeah.
Did I just get, And I got a B in seminary. How do you get a B for your testimony?
Oh, man.
I thought, did I just flunk seminary? Wow. So there were some challenges. There were some challenges. And also I was leading the music in Sunday school, and that bishop was going to ask me. He wasn't mean. He said, I know you're a young girl, but you know, there are people who are sitting down on the front row who think your skirts are too short. And he says, do you think you could lower those hemlines? And I thought, no. But I'll wear my mother's clothes. So from then on, I would get enough to lead the music in my mother's dress every Sunday.
Thank God.
So there were some.
Oh, yay, with the body shaming.
But that's okay. You get over it and you go on.
Katie, anything with you and leaders, though, before I have another question, but anything in those areas that, you know, how would you handle it if you faced it today? Or were there people in the past that sort of fed into your perfectionism and your sense of failure?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've always had, like, very well-intentioned leaders. But, you know, I mean, I don't want to speak, like, super negatively of any past leaders, but there have been a couple that did things that, like, looking back on it now, especially when I was, like, younger, like, a young adult or a teenager or whatever, like, looking back on it now, I would set some pretty strong boundaries. And I would I've been in a couple of interviews, like when I was a young adult, especially, that, like, at the time I was like, okay, but, like, today I would be like, goodbye, like, this interview.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, and you shared about that in that podcast that we did with, yep, Bonner Ritchie and
yes,
Bill Hansen. And so, yeah, yeah, so you have had some rough ones, but now it's just, and I'm guessing, Linda, that's with you too. You kind of both are centered in your own spiritual selves. You kind of know what's culture and what's gospel and what's personality and things like that. And it sounds like you've reached a spot where both of you could just sort of finesse that in terms of, you know, appreciate that this is your style for living the gospel, but, you know, God and I are good, or whatever, with right, what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Okay, that's comfortable for you too, Linda. Good. Now, you know, one of the things that I really appreciated about Elder Uchtdorf's talk this last time, and Katie will know that I kind of introduced this idea of doing a good shepherd thing by talking about my friend Heather, who had passed away, who was the Relief Society president out in Tooele. And it was the part of Elder Uchtdorf's talk that I kind of framed this with was, you know, give us a chance. You may be surprised how open we are, you know, to talk with you, or you know, if you think that we're one way, I bet you'll, if you really discover who we are as church leaders, that you'll find room for you and things like that. And so it was, you know, Heather, and the story that I was telling Linda was that Heather would listen to my podcast, even though these weren't her questions at all. And then I was always nervous that I was going to, like, mess up her testimony because she'd be introduced to things that were, you know, a little bit, you know, on the side that, yeah, most people don't even know about or something, but I know they're real questions in these communities. And she goes, you know, and her whole thing was, they're not my questions, but they're the questions of some of the women that I serve, so I need to get in there and be informed. And it just impressed me so much that she would do that. And I guess what I want to know from you is, not only just in the leaders, I think Elder Uchtdorf was maybe a little bit talking about the leaders, but just in the ward that you serve in, whether now or not, maybe I need you to go more general than that, because I guess theoretically people could find out what ward you guys are in or whatever, but are you finding just this wider variety of Mormons than, you know, they may look all the same on Sunday. We kind of get into that ritual of the way the answers and the questions are given, and nobody really probably gives much of a peek behind the curtain. But as a leader, are you discovering just a wider variety than maybe some of us would want to give credit to without really knowing?
I think yes, to a certain degree, because these young people coming into our communities now are very educated individuals. These sisters are smart. They are reading. They are studying. They are asking the questions. They are working hard. They have a lot of stressors in their lives. They really do. And there is no perfect situation. I had the opportunity to listen and to help in many, many cases. And it's a challenge. And the gospel is there to help them get through it. We're not representing. We're not people playing out the gospel. The gospel is playing inside our hearts to make us who we are. And that is where a lot of people really are. And you're right. Those 3 hours when people go to church and they look at this myriad of people who have the little smile on their face and they're sitting there and you think everything's okay. And it is not okay. Mm-hmm. And they are struggling and they are working hard to do their best.
Katie, anything that you've noticed in that area too?
Well, I think that whenever you take the time to get to know somebody, no matter what you assume about them from the first appearance, you discover that everyone's fighting a battle. There's that quote, I can't remember the dude that said it, but he says, be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a great battle. And I think that when you take the time to get to know people and when you talk to them and when you show up as you, you know what I mean? When you show up without a mask, you give space for other people to kind of drop their masks and to be real as well.
That is such good advice and such a good observation. Thank you, both of you. Wow. Linda, what a neat surprise this has been. Is there anything else you'd want to share about leadership in the church or just space and grace or anything that kind of fits onto Katie's stuff?
I think I just want to close by saying I'm just thankful that in the church you are allowed to cut out your own mold. And you are respected for that.
Well, thank you, Linda, for that. And, oh, man, what a wonderful surprise that you came on. And Katie, anything that occurs to you to say as we go? Otherwise, we'll just head on out of here.
I just think, like, one thing that has kind of hit me lately is that as frustrating as it is sometimes, and people who know me well will know that by frustrating, I mean I get really aggravated by it sometimes.
Okay. Yep.
The humanness of the leaders in the church and the people in the church, like the imperfect, you know, the imperfect way that we all are,
yep.
You know, it can be like a drag sometimes. But then the same way that I was embraced in a time when I didn't feel worthy, when I didn't feel good about myself, and when I, you know, probably had been messing up a lot, like, I would hope that as we grow in the gospel of Christ, we could extend that same kind of love to the people around us, including our leaders on a local level, including our leaders on a general level, who are likewise kind of bumbling around in the dark like we all are. And if we could all extend that same kind of grace and space to each other, we could really do something awesome with this body of Christ thing.
Amazing. Thank you so much. Always love having you on. Gotta have you. We gotta figure out some more topics to get you on.
Ah, you're so nice. It's so fun.
Thank you, both of you. It's just been wonderful to have you on, and just can't wait to have people get to meet you.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks, Dan.
I hope you all enjoyed that. I just love meeting with everybody here, and let's do it again. So now that you've heard this, you've got a sense of this kind of project, let's make Good Shepherds a recurring, every few months, let's release one on stories of people who are getting it. And again, it's like I said at the very beginning, it's not only the leaders, but just hearing your own faith journeys and using this forum as a chance to tell about your own lives and how you got centered where you are and the people that have made a difference in that process. I think it brings a lot of hope and a lot of good things. Thanks again for tuning in. Thank you for all your support of Mormon Matters. I know it's the busy holiday season, but it's also the giving season. And if there's a chance that you're thinking of where should I send my support this year, I hope that you'll give us a consideration. It really helps so much with the way that I'm putting things together with my family. It's been an interesting year. So grateful. Please come to the blog. Please share your own stories. Please write me privately, and we can just record these anytime. And when I get several together, we'll launch another episode of Stories of Good Shepherds. So thanks, everybody. Wish you all well. Cue the music.
Thank you for joining us today on Mormon Matters Podcast. To discuss this podcast with others, please check us out at mormonmatters.org. To keep this podcast alive, or to join our support community, please consider a tax-deductible donation today at mormonmatters.org. Music for this podcast was brought to you by Brittany and Clayton Pixton. The Mormon Matters logo was generously provided by StudioCase.com. Thank you for listening.